Hi everyone, it's Jocelyn and welcome to the Magnetic Abundance Podcast. You are in the right place if you're a storyteller, business professional, coach and entrepreneur desiring to make millions joyfully and work with affluent clients. In each episode, I will teach you how to take your power back and grow your business in the most aligned way. So let's get started.
Well, welcome back everyone to this amazing episode. Today, I have my wonderful guest, Melissa Leond. She is a wonderful entrepreneur. She is an author. She's a coach. She's a podcast host. And she is joining us to talk about quite a few things that is running beautifully in her business. She has got a new book launching very soon. And I hope that you also get the opportunity to jump on her podcast as well at some point. It's called Efficiency B. And you will find so much insights and knowledge. So Melissa, welcome to Magnetic Abundance Podcast. What does magnetic abundance mean to you?
Oh, you know, I just love the title. I think it is so magnetic to be cliche, but really, like, for me, abundance is having enough of what I need in the moment when I need it. And magnetic abundance for me means making sure that I'm attracting the things that I need, but kind of before I need them, because you don't know what you need until you're in the moment. But I, being an efficiency bitch that I am, that I have to think before, I have to plan about the abundance that I'm going to need for my future self. So I just think it's a beautiful title.
It is, it is. And so, you know, with your work and a lot of the stories that you told us, you learned so much around money, finance, the history in America when women are entitled to have their own bank account, have their own ability to take up a loan. And you did a lot of depth and research into that piece of work. Share with us, what did you feel that, you know, you could offer to women in the current generation, because that is still quite a new history, but a lot of them are unaware that that was happening maybe 50 to 60 years ago.
Yeah, you know, it, my journey in writing the book and the podcast and everything else kind of happened by awesome coincidence and timing, right? Like they say, when you're ready, the teacher will appear, and that absolutely happened in my case. And it was a lot of different things that came together for me kind of at the right time. I am a mother. I have three children. And my oldest was 10 years old in 2021. And that was when I started coming up through the book. And being that it was my oldest child and my oldest daughter, I, you know, started having these aspirations for what I wanted her life to be like. She's now old enough to remember, right? Like, you don't really remember your early childhood years, but she's old enough now to absorb and remember. And those things were coming together with me as the political landscape of the United States has been quite oscillating over the last several years. And in 2020, when Kamala Harris became the vice president of the United States, I was really impacted by that. And I didn't expect to be. It kind of took me off guard. You know, her politics aside, but just the female silhouette where it had never been before. I get goosebumps like thinking about it now, but it felt really heavy for me. And so I started thinking about me at 10 years old. And what was happening then was the Monica Lewinsky scandals with Bill Clinton and Anita Hill, and these are all American political things, but big ones for us. And my generation was very much part of the my body, control over my body. You know, FMLA came out in the United States then, which gave us protection for going on maternity leave. And then I reflected more to my mom, and my mom was 10 years old during political changes in the US of women having the right to work and it being more of a fair landscape. And then I thought back about my grandmother, who was 10 years old, watching her mom get the right to vote for the first time. So like all of those things just kind of started to come together for me. And that's a lot of where, in the title of the book is Efficiency Bitch, and the word, the B word, is not always welcomed in feminist conversations, but I use it for a couple reasons. And one of those reasons is just to kind of take us through that history of the way women have come forward through the patriarchy, so to speak, over the last 110 years or so in the United States.
And I like that you took it back to your mom when she was 10, and then your grandmother, and then for yourself, and then your daughter, you know, being 10 years old. So you can imagine like a four generation through, and there's different milestones that has shown progression. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, with 2021, we had pandemic that happened globally. So
yeah,
it is such a huge shake of the whole planet. And it's a message that the whole world needs to really move in a whole new direction. That the old traditional structures, patterns, no longer can really be applied anymore. We have to look for new approaches to things and be so open. And I don't know about, you know, what the month of September felt, but in the circle that I'm part of, like September was a heavy, heavy month from an energy perspective, because it really has shifted a lot of things from the planetarium perspective. And it is bringing that awareness that, you know, people still want to revert back to pre-pandemic. It's like that. It's really a time to move forward, to look into the future. And everything is just really shaken off, really pulling down, tearing down, and that the new future is ahead of us. So we can go into that direction so much into what is the new future. And you are releasing a book that is very holistic. It covers so many different aspects of life. And I wanted you to share with us, you know, how did you decide to add all that area into this book? And yeah, how much did it get out of you to pour your heart into this book?
You know, I was telling you before we started recording, I'm in this funny little gray area right now where I'm not sure if I'm tired or hungry or depressed or excited, or like I have all these emotions going through me right now because the book literally just finished and is going to print this week. So October 31st, it will be available for sale on Amazon, and I'm having all the feels, right? But I, you know, if I go back to the B word that I was talking about before, but for me, the word bitch was far more than just about feminism. It was also an acronym for the important pillars that I believe make me very productive and have also made me very successful. So the subtitle to the book is How Ambitious Women Can Do It All With, Can Have It All Without Doing It All. And for me, like the efficiency part and the five pillars go hand in hand. And the five pillars are represented in the acronym of BITCH. So it's bank, inbox, time, connection, and harmony. And those five things also kind of came together by accident. They're part of who I am from a very fundamental, like who is Melissa type of question, but they're also very fundamental to the way that I do business. They're fundamental to the way that I'm a mother. They're fundamental to the way that I get things done. And I've been in the corporate, where I was in the corporate world for 20 years, you know, climbed the corporate ladder, took a step back and started doing more things for small businesses. And that all centers around money for me. I'm a fractional CFO. And so B, being the leading letter, stands for bank. And that was really the thing that started the pen moving for me. I didn't come to the conclusion of the acronym until I was mostly through, it was time and money that I was originally after. When I was mostly through like the time chapter, I went, oh, I see a pattern here. And so we went through the rest, and the acronym came together beautifully.
Yes, and they are all interwoven into our life, into our everyday life. And I remember reading and reviewing, you know, about inbox, where you talk about inbox and emails and all that. And I reflected mm-hmm. to the roles that I held in corporate world. Like you, I was in, you know, leadership for 20 years, leading teams and all that. And my inbox was just crazy. Every single day I had hundreds of emails, but there were not emails that were meaningful and directive. There were a lot of repeat information, people not taking action, people are not being efficient, people are not thinking, people are not present. So there's a lot of just work tasks, but it was not purposeful. And so I think that chapter that you wrote was really helping people zone into what is really powerful. Once you touch that email, respond to it, move on. And that is necessary, because I had one staff member who had 9,000 plus emails. And every time you speak to him, he's like, yeah, I've seen that email. But you know that when people don't read the email, because we used to actually tag and help us know who has opened up the email as well. Mm-hmm. And some people are just like, you know what, the email doesn't bother me. I'm a people person. People will tell me what we do. And because we have assistants, you know, in a lot of the roles, the assistant mm-hmm. will go, hey, you know what, you need to look into this. And so it was really important to manage that part. But also for me personally, was the email was very much around, now I just go, what is important in the email? If not, clear out of my inbox. Yeah. Very important, because letting go and cleansing is necessary and decluttering that.
Yeah, and I have found, particularly in the corporate world, people send emails just to send emails so that their name is popping up. I mean, there were emails that I would get. People would CC me on the email just to have my name on there so that somebody else would know I was watching. And I eventually went to them and I said, stop it. Unless you need my action on this email, stop copying me. If you send it to me, I'm taking it as an escalation and I will go barge down doors. So don't copy me on an email just because it's convenient for you to have my name. Like, I don't do that anymore. I don't play that game. So, I mean, the intention of email was to get rid of memos, right? And look at what it's become. And I'm glad for what it's become. I really love, I think email is a very effective and efficient way to do business and to talk to friends or families who are far away, share pictures. But it's evolved from what its original intent was to be. And I will do everything in my power to reduce them. Every day, I spend a few minutes unsubscribing from emails, because you just get subscribed to everything. Every time you buy something online, you get subscribed to 5 or 6 different things. And so I'm really careful about what I let in my inbox. That's for sure.
Yes, I do the same as well. And most recently, I unsubscribed to so many Facebook groups mm-hmm. because, you know, once you are participating in certain, you know, groups, they have so many invitations and they want you to be in their group. I did a 20 and leave the group over the weekend to just clear up, because some of them were not active. They've never posted. They never had any meaningful content. So yes, decluttering is absolutely necessary, especially the final quarter of 2022. Let's mm-hmm. really declutter as much to bring the lightness into 2023.
Oh, I agree. Going through emails and social media channels and clearing out the clutter. I have folders for anything that I need to keep in my email, and everything else is deleted. And if you have, if you're listening to this and you're like, I have 10,000, I don't know where to start, go back 3 months to just delete everything that's older than 3 months old. Because if you haven't looked at it, you're probably not going to. Or put it all in a file, right? And then you can go sift through it if necessary, because there is nothing time. It will suck your time to go through all of those emails, and it's not worth it.
I know. So tell us, you have left corporate world and you started your own business. Mm-hmm. Share with us that defining moment where you go, you know what, I'm done with this corporate world gig. I've got the experience, I've got the skills, I've got the knowledge. Yeah. But now, that very moment of, I know I can set up my own business. I know I can thrive in what I do. I know I've got all the mastery and skills that I need to.
For me, it was a really emotional experience to leave the corporate world. I had been with the same company since I graduated college. So I was with them almost 17 years, but by the time I left, and I grew up there. I mean, I learned everything that I can tell you today from them. I mean, I have a master's degree, I have a bachelor's degree, I have a project management certification. I certainly have some book smarts to go along with the experience, but I experienced global travel with this organization. I experienced multiple recessions, right? Like I was in senior finance when the housing crash happened in the US in 2007, 2008. It was everything for me, right? And early 2019, I started feeling, yeah, I don't know, maybe unseen is a good word. I had a very visible global role where I was responsible for changing in the entire accounting organization into a centralized model. And so I was naturally the bad guy, if you will, for implementing change. I mean, change is hard for everybody. And I was the hero to the corporate office, but I was the bad guy to the field. And it really started to take an emotional toll. And I wanted more. I wanted to do more. I wanted to maybe put some layers back in to help raise up and build management structure around accounting. And then COVID happened. And it was like, I think a collective smack in the face for everybody on the planet. We all went, wow, what? Do I really like what I'm doing? If I don't, then I should go now. And I did love the organization. And I say that over and over because I don't want anybody from that organization to ever hear me talk about leaving them was because I wanted to leave the people or the org, because it wasn't that. I just had this feeling that I needed to do something for me next. And so I cried for 2 weeks, you know, after I gave my resignation, because I did feel like I was breaking up with a relationship that I had for almost two decades. But what I realized is that my relationship was with the human beings, and I still have them. I just was text messaging with my boss 30 seconds before we start, my old boss, before we were recording. And like, I haven't been with them for 2 years now at this point. So the human being connections are absolutely still alive and well. It was just something in my soul that needed to do the next thing. And it was hard and it was scary. And, you know, step by step, every week it'd be like, okay, what do we have to do now? Oh, we need a logo. Okay, what do I need to do now? Oh, I need to file for, you know, my government license. What do I have to do now? And every week there's something new to uncover. And pretty soon you turn around and you ate the whole elephant. I don't know if the analogy translates like to Australia, but we have this phrase, right? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. It's just like that building a company. And now we're doing really, really well. We're 2 years in and thriving. We have about 50 companies that we help today in different capacities. We do like fractional CFO work, bookkeeping, financial account, like coaching for small business owners. So we don't do tax, not my game. You know, we really are specific about the services that we offer, but myself and one other woman are the co-owners of the business.
Amazing. And I think that's so necessary. When you decided to leave, can you share with us that financial spot that a lot of people want to leave their corporate world, but they don't know how to manage their financial runway? Because a lot of people leave from a place that they want to leave, but they are living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
Right. So what would be your advice for someone who wants to leave their corporate job, may have a mortgage, may have, you know, a family to run, but they know that they need to transition out into their own business for their own soul's mission, you know, next chapter? What would be your advice for women? Because there's so many female who knew they can't be seen, they can't be heard anymore to certain levels. Work still need to be done, you know, whether it's at board level or senior leadership level. What would you say to them?
You know, I'm a big believer that money should never be on your heart, but it always has to be on your mind. Like, money makes the world go round. Money touches absolutely everything all the time, right? From the computers to the microphone to the clothes we wear. I mean, money is literally producing everything that we have in our day. And I would say to you, if you want to make a giant change, you have to, must, absolutely need to know what you spend. Without knowing what you spend, you can't know what you need to make. And when I talk to individuals and business owners, I mean, this is not a human problem versus a business problem. This is just an in general problem. We know how much we make. We know we make $10,000 a year, $100,000 a year, $20,000 a year. We know that number, but no one ever knows the number that goes out the door. And that number is far more important than the number that comes in. And that would be my biggest piece of advice is, if you haven't already done so, take the last 3 months of bank data from whoever you bank with, credit cards, checking account, savings account, and download it into the CSV file, turn it into Excel, and scrub it. Figure out, you know, how much money do you spend in groceries and gasoline and food at restaurants and your mortgage, and really know that number. And once you know that number, you'll know where you can save. You know, you'll know what you don't actually need to spend anymore. But more importantly, you'll know what your targets need to be for opening your business. And it takes money to make money. So I shouldn't say all, but most businesses do take a little bit of capital to start, to open the doors, to buy a computer, to file for a license, you know, just to buy inventory, depending upon what you're selling. And you need to know all those numbers in order to get a loan, in order everything. So without that piece, I'd say you're going to be swimming upstream for a bit. You can certainly start without knowing those numbers, but eventually you're going to have to know them. Either the bank's going to ask, the government's going to ask when it's time for taxes. So just knowing those numbers, if you have a partner and your partner's like, whoa, I don't think we can afford this, all the better to have your numbers. And then you can say, actually, we can. We just don't have to eat out 3 nights a week anymore, because I'm going to do this for the next 6 months. I mean, I didn't have a backup plan when I jumped, but my husband does work. And so we had the opportunity to have him work while we figured this out. And now he left his job and works for the company that I built. So you just don't know what's around the corner, but I can promise you, I knew the numbers of what was leaving my household before I made a switch.
Very, very powerful, because I think that is so important for a lot of people who wants to jump from corporate role into their own business without knowing the numbers, without knowing the cash flow. It is very, very challenging. And when it's challenging, then the energy you're trying to generate leads comes from a place of desperation. And yes, that is not the kind of energy that your clients want to engage for the services or the product, because it's so much of heaviness, it's so much of, you know, wanting to prove and forcing and pushing. And so the world of attracting the kind of sales and leads becomes very distasteful. And that's something that a lot of people need to know, because a lot of people have been presented with the idea that, oh, you know, starting your entrepreneur journey is fun, is exciting. It is, because you get the freedom to really create the kind of business that you want and the passion that drives you to wake up every single morning. But it also comes with other sort of responsibilities that, you know, as a CEO now of the business, there needs to be other areas in the numbers game that needs to really work powerfully. So wonderful, wise, insightful advice. And to wrap up this podcast, I'd love to give you a few rapid fire questions.
Sure.
That you get to answer. So first one, what is the best travel experience you've ever had?
Best travel experience? Oh, you know, India. I fell in love with India when I've been a few times. The first time it scared me, so different than what I could have possibly expected. And then the second and third and fourth time I went, fell in love. The people, the food, it's just so different. And I've had the good fortune of being a lot of places around the world, but India has been my favorite, just from, it's such a contrast from where I live.
Awesome. What are your non-negotiable practices every single day?
Well, it starts with my morning. I have to have an hour alone in the morning. Like, I am not a good person if I don't have that hour. my son woke me up this morning at 5 o'clock and I was like, no, man, you're going back to bed. I usually get up at 5:30. So he got up about 30 minutes before I put him right back to bed. And I need to read. I need to have a cup of coffee. I need to practice some yoga. I just need a little bit of time before the world needs me.
And what was the best podcast episode you've ever listened to that sparks change or transformation in your world?
You know, that's a really good question. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and the one that probably got me moving, and I was in a place where I was, it was like when I was thinking about leaving my corporate career and I was going, it was when Brené Brown first started her podcast. So I was listening to like the first 1, 2, 3 episodes, and she's got such an amazing energy to get people moving anyway. But that she encouraged her audience to go alcohol free, which I am after almost 3 years now. And so that I think really had a big part of the changing of the trajectory of my life.
Awesome. And if you have $1 million, how would you spend it?
Oh my gosh. If you'd asked me a couple of years ago, I would have said I'd go back to school. But now I don't think I would. Now I think I would open a few businesses, most likely. I don't know if it'd be franchises or building it from the bottom up, but I definitely have the entrepreneur bug now and I want more. I definitely want more.
When you are given a secret camera that you can place anywhere you want in the world, where would you place that secret camera?
Following my children around for the rest of their lives. like I said, my oldest is entering junior high and her world is changing on a regular basis. And so not in a snoopy mom way, but I'm curious what life is like as an adolescent now. I mean, we didn't have social media growing up and we didn't have the internet, and their worlds are very different than ours. So I'm very curious about the teenagers and the adolescents of this generation.
My last rapid fire question. Your 88-year-old self. What would your 88-year-old self tell you today?
Oh, goodness. I think that I was proud of myself for taking the big leaps. You know, I was afraid to for a very long time. And if you'd asked me that 5 years ago, my 88-year-old self probably would have said, you know, you should have started your own business like you always wanted to. And I've done a lot of the things that 5 years ago me wanted to do. I created a vision board, you know, with pictures on it and words. And at the beginning of my newfound journey, when I left corporate America, and all of those things are done. Like, write a book was on there, and, you know, guest lecture at university was on there, and I'm doing all of those things. So now I need to come up with, and I think this is part of what I was telling you, I'm not sure what I'm feeling right now, if I'm hungry or depressed or tired, or I don't know what I'm feeling. I think I'm feeling like I'm cooking up a new vision. Like, what's the next me look like? And hopefully 88-year-old me will say, you had a lot of visions and you did them all well. I'm hoping that I can continue this trajectory.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming into this podcast show, Melissa. I really appreciate who you are, what you do, and how you are creating such a positive impact in this world. Look forward to the release of your book on Amazon, and I hope that our readers will get a copy. It's coming out on the 31st of October. So stay tuned and follow Melissa on Instagram as well. So bye for now, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please check out the show notes for more details and resources that you can access and explore. I would like to invite you to join my mailing list, rate this podcast 5-star, share it with your friends and family. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. And last but not least, I want to invite you to work with me So book a consult and let's discuss how I can help you make money joyfully and attract affluent clients. Have a great day.